Yes, Sir Marcus, first question that strikes the reader is, of course, the number 10. 10 Marcus, the Maral is Marich. We'll just share a Chedush Yerim Asiyata Dishmai to begin the Shir tonight. We have Asar Mamoris Nivrol in the famous Mishnah Perkei Avos and Perkei Mishnah. We have the Asiris Adibros and Parshas Yisro, of course, right? The Chedush Yerim. Eberster brought the entire world into being Ayyadei, the Asar Mamoris Nivra Olam. Now Hashem Yisbarach, fast forwarding to Parshas Yisro, says, Yidin Anokhi Hashem Elokecha. I'm now going to give you Asar Sedibros, the basic framework for all the Tayyag Mitzvahs. Rasaji Golan Sefer Asaros, we know all the Tayyag Mitzvahs are there. By the Asar Sedibros, what's the link, the crucial connection between the Asar Mamoris and the Asar Sedibros? Maybe the Eberster, like the Rambam outlines, and the beginning of his parish from Mishnah is the chelik to the last perk in Sanhedrin. Maybe Eberster created the world taka with the Asar Mamoris, and now Asar Sedibros, who are you? Eberster, who are you? How do I know that it's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who created the world who is continuously being Mechadish, Betuba, Becholyam, Tovin, Masa, Bereshis? How do I know it's the same Hashem who's going to now give us a Torah that's going to take us to New Madrigas? Alright, the Chedush Arim, Al Yadei, the Mamutza, that intermediate 10 of the Eser Makis, that's the proof that we need, Vayamein Ha'am, that Al Yadei, God's involvement, His intervening into this world, down here in this world, seeing the Shekhinah, connecting with the Shekhinah, and observing the manipulations of the omnipotent HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol, as He directs all Chilkei HaBriya, Tetzach Hadash V'Yachav, the Barbanel, and others. We shine him, talk about the breakup Avram Yudah Hayanosi Mohem Simonim, and Joseph the Pashtus Tadvarim. And we see that Hashem controls the Tzach, all the creations down here connected to the water, connected to the ground, Hadash, all the creatures, and everything that is living on top of the ground, and in terms of human beings, in terms of Bema, and then of course, Be'achav, everything above, whether it's hailstorms, whether it's the flying locust, whether it's hitting, striking the sun, and then of course, Makis Mechoros, Hashem controls every chelik of the Bria. This is the proof that the same Hashem Yisbaruch who brought the Bria into existence at the very beginning of time is the same Hashem who is continuously involved in the Bria, continuously manipulating it at will, the divine puppeteer Kaviyocho pulling strings within nature. Every second of every day, He is the one now who is giving us Aser Sedibros, and Mamela Anochi Shemakecha has showed to see Chamei Artesayim. The reason why you should now take on Anochi Shemakecha is because I gave you the proof, the Edus Namona, that I took out of Mitzrayim, I Yedei, the conduit of the Esamachus, through the Esamachus that serves as the crucial bridge linking together the Aser Mamoris Nivra Olam and the Aser Sedibros. Perhaps piggybacking on the Chedush Yerim, we can understand the interesting title of Parshas Bo. We know the famous Bala Turin. Now, why is it called Bo? Bo is 2 and 1. It's Gematria 3. There are 3 Makis in Parshas Bo. But clearly, there's got to be something more to the story. After all, Va'era doesn't equal 7. There were 7 Makis in Va'era. But again, perhaps the idea is, but Drush, we could suggest that Parshas Bo, when we witness the culmination of the Eser Makis, Al Yadei the Chedush Yerim, what we were simultaneously witnessing was the union of the Asar Mamoris that began with the Beis of Bereishis, with the Asar Sedibros that begins with the Aleph of Anochi, hence the juxtaposition of the Beis of Bereishis coming together with the Aleph of Anochi in Parshas Bo through the culmination of the Eser Makis, perhaps yet another idea on why it's called Parshas Bo, as the Beis of Bereishis is united with the Aleph of Anochi. So we need to have 10. One has to wonder, Eberster, if the Tachlis was to take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim, so just take him out of Mitzrayim. And you know what? Even the Eser Makis, just do one massive miracle and take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim on your day. One incredible and overwhelming miracle. Why the need to have 10? So we know that there's an inyan of the Kedusha of 10, that the Maral is Marach, and we just discussed the Chedusha Harim. But part of the idea that Mefarshim explain is precisely to highlight that Nakuda, that first the world and of course Klal Yisrael, along with the Mitzvah, have to be taught, have to glean that all-important lesson. It's not just that Hashem is the mighty creator who in one fell swoop can take out of Mitzrayim. First, He wants to show the world how He controls every chelik of the Bria, of the Detzach Adash Be'achav, every aspect of creation is controlled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't just think he's the God over Mitzrayim because he could strike them all in one fell swoop and take you out instantly. No, it's going to be a gradual process. It's going to last for some time so that Mitzrayim and Klal Yisrael can all go ahead and absorb that all-important message that Hashem is constantly controlling every chelik of the Bria, and you'll see that through the Detzach, Adash, and the Biachav. So now we understand why the Stipler writes in Chaye Olam, Chelik Beis Pertes Vav, the Tachlis of the Makkos, when you put it all together, is to realize Hashem brought the world into being, Hashem is continuously creating the world, Hashem is continuously manipulating nature. So now we have the number 10. Whatever pshat, Alpi Drush, Chassidus, Kabbalah, Havada, the Shla, and the Arizal, they talk about, it's Keneged the Eser Sfiris. That's why the break of the Shla, Kaddish writes of the 7 in Va'era, and the 3 in Parshas Bo, Keneged the 7 Midas, Sfiris, Atotainus, and then of course, the Chochma Bina Das. That's something already different for Parshas Bo. We have all these explanations. In the end of the day, clearly that Tzana Shova is 10 unbelievably awesome plagues that have come strike the Mitzrayim that are going to go out and afflict them while saving, while not harming Klal Yisrael all the while. So we have 10 things that are going to just blow us away. Unbelievable miracles. So we take a look at the plagues and we're a little bit surprised right at the outset. Plague number one is Dam. I can understand starting with Dam. Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh, water. Water, in essence, is the bare essential of life. It comprises 70% of the universe, 70% of the microcosmic level of the human being. So let's start with the water. Not only that, the Nile. Where do you get the word Nile? Nile Isaac Asimov writes in his book of Facts as Egyptian for water. Their whole society, they didn't have rain. Their whole society was alongside the Nile. It was all about water. So let's start with the basic staple of existence, water. And at the end of the day, what did Hashem do? And let's turn it into blood. And then, lo and behold, the Khartoume, Paro, the Baalei Kishuv, the necromancers, those who knew the black magic, the sorcery, Kishuv, Machashvan, Pamalia, Shemalia, what do? They duplicate it. I don't understand. All the Makkos are, Abishter says, everybody stay in the sidelines, I'm going to blow you away and show you I'm going to do things that nobody else can do. The Egyptians can't do it, their gods can't do it. We get up to plague number one, and what happens? The Mitzvah do the same thing. I know you're going to tell me optical illusion. It didn't taste like blood. Mashenki with Moshe Rabbeinu did it. It tasted like blood. It had the consistency of blood. And Mitzvah just gave it the optical illusion appearance, the illusory appearance that it was Dam. But Avada Kishif doesn't transform it. That's a beautiful chilukim. And you're going to say the same thing by Tzvadeo? And we get to plague number two. They also created frogs. And the end of the day, I understand, if Abishter needs to come up with 10, I'm sure we could get together any class of 5th graders, we could get together 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, you know, bring them in a classroom, and these creative imaginative minds, they'll concoct a nice selection of 10 awesome things. You know, bring dragons in there, control something, anything. I come up with any 10, but blood, they do the same thing. And then Tzvardeya, Vayasu King Chatum Yotzayim. When do they wake up? Ezra Kimi, only a Makkos Kinen. And the Abishter is picking 10, why in the world would he pick 2 Makkos? And when we see that Tzad HaShem is, Abishter controls the Bria, Abishter is greater than all the other gods. So why give them something that they themselves were capable of duplicating? And why do you understand Dam and Tzvardeya? Then we get to Makkos Kinen. All of a sudden now a little bug comes onto the scene. How do we find Tita Sarasha, one little Yitush, one little gnat, a mosquito? Abishter says, I'll bring it down with a little bug. Now, what was the token for Makkos Kinen? That also, they had bugs, they had lice. So there was a lice infestation. You know what? When they were digging the Panama Canal, you lost tens of thousands, also malaria, and all the diseases that are carried by mosquitoes and little bugs. So you got a lot of bugs at the same time. Oh, and all of a sudden, so Rashi tells us based on Chazal, the Chartumim couldn't do it. Why? Because Kishiv can't be sholeit on a beria, and that's Pachas Mikasaira. So in the end of the day, the reason, and Lechaira, the only reason Rashi's Megala, why they were able to convince themselves, you're right, that's what Kim is, because our powers can't control this barrier. True. But in the end of the day, what was so fascinating about lice? They had lice, they had bugs. What is so unique, so special about the mosquito?
One big green lice. Big green.
I'm sorry?
Green lice.
It is extreme lice. They give them extreme something that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. Give them a new bria. Give them a whole new insect. Show the world, Hashem, that you want every bria into creation. So create a new bria. Create something new. And do something new. So a lot of bugs. He gave them a lot of bugs. Today, a lot of bugs. Where would you see that they were unique Be'etzem? That's exactly what I'm asking. We don't find that they were unique Be'etzem. They were only unique that Kishev couldn't control it.
Can we talk to him about that?
Again, and the Poshet, Psukim, and Rashi, we don't see any of that. So let's just focus tonight, the first three and the last three. Then we have Arov, Dever, Shchin, Haborab. And then we get to the beginning of Bo. What do we find in Bo? Arba, Choshech, Makis, Pechoros. Now we know from the Maral and others that the Makis were clearly going in ascending order. As I understand, Dam, okay, Tzvardeya, Kinam, Arov, Shchin, Dever, Arba, okay, all of a sudden you get to Arba, Locust. What's so severe about Locust? Plague number 8, what's the big deal? Grasshoppers. They have grasshoppers. Rashi even brings a ketta from the Medrash. And they actually benefited from this market. They were starving. Borod wiped out most of their food, most of the irrigation, most of the crops. So what do? They would catch the grasshoppers. We know Taman didn't even have a Messiah. We just laid it upon Shashmini. They're kosher grasshoppers. Interestingly enough, it's the only insect that's kosher. The Mitzrim were able to eat these kosher grasshoppers. And Mitzrim were eating grasshoppers. They were benefiting from the market. But either way, this is number 8. I don't know about you, but if I had a choice to have a lot of grasshoppers, and we know there have been swarms, and I know the Ramban, and you're going to tell me all the Rishonim, why was this swarm, and why was it unique in contrast to all the other ones? Well, Lamaisa, we know there are plagues of locusts, we know there are cases where you had 80 million plus locusts, we know the devastation that they can go in and wreak havoc in the world, but if I had a choice to be surrounded by plagues of locusts, grasshoppers that I can't even eat, versus lions, tigers, and bears chasing me wherever I go, I'd probably still go for the locusts, right? They're not killing anyone. And at the end of the day, what is so severe about Arba? And then you get to Choshech. Choshech, did anyone die in Choshech? Every other market, according to many Midrash, was 7 days. Choshech was only 6. Anybody died? We know the Balei Drush, the worst thing is to sit in loneliness. You couldn't share the experience with anyone. Beautiful psychological explanations, and indeed they're all right. But in the end of the day, again, just from Shuto Shemikra and the Pasha descents, and what was so bad about Choshech? So Choshech, they're sitting there frozen, so they're frozen for 6 days. That's so much worse than the lions, tigers, and then boils all over your body. What was really the severity about Choshech? Then, of course, Makis Pachoros, we understand, destroying all sense of continuity. But there's got to be a mahalach here. What is really going on behind the scenes at Samakis? So I'd like to perhaps suggest, based on what went on in ancient Egypt over 3,300 years ago, I think it'll give us some clarity on what's going on here in the Psukim of Va'era and Parshas Bo. And we find in Parshas Bo, Perkid Beis, Pusagid Beis, and V'cholo Hei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim Ani Hashem. Abishur is going to mete out punishment, mete out judgment against not only the Mitzrim, the Egyptians themselves, but also against their gods. Uvelo Heihem Eseh Shvatim Ani Hashem. And we say in the Haggadah, in Haggadah, V'Heihem Eseh Shvatim. And the end of the day, where did Hashem punish their gods? Where do we see? The Mepharshim were even bothered by that. The Abishur goes out of his way and says, so there's one God. One God. We took one God. We took a Keves Mishchu. Mishchu Kuchulachem Tzon. Shachtu us a Pesach. Mishchu Atzvachem Min Avodah Zarah. So we have one God. One demonstration. That's why the Torah went out of its way. And David HaMelech and Tehillim and Halakha. That's why he goes out of its way. And that's why we're mentioning him. Because they took one of their gods. There's got to be something more going on here. Now what really was going on? Not only that, Beis Halevi and others tackle the question, what did Paro really want? Was Paro about destroying the Yidden spiritually or physically? Now we know throughout history we have a Yavan. Yavan wanted to get us spiritually. We have a Hun who wants to get us physically. The famous Mishnah Berurah, Alpi Lavush. This is why we celebrate this one by Halal and Adar. This is why we celebrate this one with Yom Mishta V'Simcha. And the other day, typically, it's usually one or the other. So what did Paro really want? What was really at stake in ancient Egypt? Did he really want to physically destroy us? Well, clearly we were working for him. Not only were we working for him, but Sheva Levi was allowed to stay alive. The Sfasemis is Marich, and Sfasemis Olshas, And Megillah Davdala and Amenalef, he wants to suggest women were not even part of the Shibud. Only in one aspect of destroying their morale by having Anoshim do the work of Anoshim and vice versa. But the Mashmah from Sotah at Aleph from the base is that the men went out to work and they came home to their wives at night. The Mashmah, the wives didn't go out to work. Svasema says, and not only that, when it came to the Gezeru Kolabay, so the women were clearly not subject to the same thing. You don't find any intent in the perspective of Paro to want to destroy all of Klai Yisrael. If I care, let's keep them alive. Klai Yisrael is alive. And the whole worry, how do we start Shmos? And then they're going to go in and leave. We don't want them to leave. He clearly never said, let's go in and kill them. The only reason the Gezerah of Kol HaBein HaYilul HaTashem was even issued in the first place, as Rashi says, based on Chazal, because his Chartumim told him that Moshiach Shaisul is going to be born today. So we made a Gezerah, and the end of the day, that's it. Went back to normal life. So what did he want? To physically destroy them? That's clearly not the indications from the Pesukim and Midrash Chazal. So what about spiritually destroying them? Beis HaLevi does talk about them. Clearly there was a component spiritually destroying them, but anywhere in the Pesukim or in Chazal, that the Beis HaTalmud that was set up was destroyed. And the horse the fun of Goshen, back in Vayigash, Yaakov says, I'm only going down Yehuda, you're setting up a Beis HaTalmud. Nowhere do we find a Chazal that Paro ever destroyed that Beis HaTalmud. Rashi, Osru l'zakeinecha, Moshe by the burning bush, who is the zakeinim yechodim shevi yeshiva. If you're Nazi Germany, you want to destroy the Jews, what do you get? The Talmid Chachamim first, you get the Rabbanim first, you destroy the leaders. We don't find that Paro ever destroyed the zakeinim. And not only that, spiritually destroy them, they will machshev the tribe of priests, Sheva Levi, the Ramban tells us, not the smallest number, 22,001, because they were not in the Shibud. They're not even in the Shibud. That means the Machshav, oh, priests can't work. No, we understand that. The whole Sheva Levi, Moshe Rabbeinu Chazal tell us, you know what, Paro, you know, you got to give them a day off. You know, Shabbos, okay, he doesn't understand what Shabbos is. Give him a day off. This isn't about spiritual leadership. This is about you're working for me. I'm going to show you morale. We don't really find. He was spiritually. They had Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's Maruf. They had Megillos. They were sitting and learning. They had Rosh Hashivas. They had a base of Talmud. They're living in Goshen. When you want to spiritually destroy a people, what do? You have them assimilate and acculturate and intermingle. And yet, with Klai Yisrael doing all the Averus in the world, seeking to Nemta Sharito, we find in the Yalkut Shimoni in the Medrash Tov, how do they get out? Because you go historically to all those periods, whether it's enlightenment and reform, all throughout history, anytime we assimilated with a culture, the first three things we lost were what? We lost our Yiddish names. We started to dress like the Goyim. We started to act like the Goyim. And here, no matter how many Averis we do, we still hold steadfast onto our defining ethnicity-like and traits of Loshinu Shemamus Loshinu Shemamushay. So clearly, it wasn't about spiritually destroying us. So what was Paro's real intent? What was really going on here? If you read some of the interesting books from historians, James Breasted, Giles, Unwrapping the Pharaohs, Henry Frankfurt wrote a classic called Kingship and the Gods, Avram Shalom Yehuda, Jewish historian, Ava Vaur of Accuracy of the Bible, a collection of historians analyzing archaeological findings, the writings that came out of Egypt from the pyramids, v'chulei. And what emerges is Egypt was about, we control the world. The mightiest people in the history of the world. In fact, there really hasn't been a dominion. Sir Jonathan Sacks, Lord Jonathan Sacks, speaks about this idea that there really has never been a more dominating people in the history of the world than ancient Egypt. They controlled the world. It's not like Achashverosh, 127 Medinas. Imamish, they controlled the world, and they controlled the world for an extended period of time. There really was no nation that for such a long period, still wasn't for such a long time. It wasn't the same thing. Rabbi Sacks says, you know, you look for throughout all the writings, and no one controlled really all society, commerce, everything. They were on top of the world. We know from Chazal, you see it from the Erev Rav, and that they had, and not only the Jews did they subjugate, but we find other nations in the world. They were the mightiest people in the world. So perhaps what was really going on was, who are the dominating people? And who is the Aryan race of this day and age? Who is on top? Think about what they tried to do. We see from the Pesukim and Chazal, and this is all about, why did Paro start with all the Gezeris? Maybe they're going to leave. So what if they leave? They can't leave and now start their own people, start their own culture. We are on top of the world. We have to subjugate and subdue every other nation. Tachas our shlita, tachas our memshola. We're going to destroy their morale. What's the morale? The zakenim will do the work of the na'arim, the na'arim will do the work of the zakenim, and nashim will do the work of the nashim, and vice versa. Let's destroy their morale. We are in control, we're on top of the world. We recognize religious beliefs. You can have the base matters, you can have your gods, you can have your sfarim, you can have Eretz Goshen. You don't even have to live amongst us. You could stay in your land, stay with your Rosh Hashivas, you can do whatever you want, but just know we are on top, and we control your life, we control society, because it was all about their polytheistic system of beliefs and their intricate god system. It was all about their gods, and our gods are the most powerful. Whole idea of the pyramids, we have the most powerful, largest structures in the entire world. Our kings, our pharaohs, it's clear. What emerges from all the Egyptian writings, they believed that they were divine, they were deities, they were the son of the sun, their number one god. In ancient Egypt, polytheism was the sun god. And that's what all the historians concur. There was a sun god called Ra, or Re or Ra, not coincidental, Ra, Shorish of Ra. This is the number one god, the sun. Writes the Malbim, Malbim and Vayera, Perek Zion, Pasuk Aleph. We know Paro got up early in the morning, and he went down to the Nile, and that's where he would go to the bathroom before anybody would see him, and that's where he would pray to his gods. Writes the Malbim, why did he go down early in the morning? Because the number one god was the sun, was Ra god. They believed that the sun controlled every chelik in the Bria. And the number two god was the Nile River. In fact, they attributed all the overflowing waters of the Nile to the movements of the sun. We know it's a mistake, it's the movements of the moon, but they worship the sun. That's why Robert A. Levine writes in his book, A Geography of Time, which people gave us the solar calendar? Ancient Egypt. Who gave us the sundial? Ancient Egypt. They also were the first ones to discover an umbrella. Not because of rain, it didn't rain in Egypt, but an umbrella to shield them from the rays of the sun. They gave us the sundial, they gave us the solar calendar, they worshipped the sun, writes the Malbim. When the sun would come up by sunrise, by Netzacham in the morning, Paro would go down as the two gods, his two primary gods would meet. He would go to god number two, the Nile, and pray as the sun would come up, please have the waters overflow and sustain all of my land. That's in their system of the number one and two gods. Now they had other gods. They had the sheep was another god. And there's a lot of symbolism if you read Avram Shlomo Yehuda's Eber V'Arov, and accuracy in the Bible, and Henry Frankfurt, kingship in the gods. And we see that what? They worship the snake. Why the constantly recurring motive of the snake? Everything's turning into snakes. Sticks into snakes. All about snakes. Snake was another god. And the frog, interestingly enough, writes Avram Shlomo Yehuda, the god of reproduction in ancient Egypt was a statue with a frog head on top of it. In their mathematic system, the largest number was the number 100,000, recognized by the symbol of a frog. Because frogs multiply at an incredibly fast rate. That's another god. The idea being that all their gods were simultaneously afflicted when we have all these ten makos. Let's take it through and we'll see the picture that emerges. We start with Dom. I remember their number one god is the sun. We're going to wait for their number one god. That's going to come at the end. And let's start now with their number two god, which is the staple of life, water. They believe all the water comes from the waters overflowing from the Nile River. Nile is water in ancient Egyptian. It's what I want to say. This is a staple of our existence, and this is our number two god. So let's start with the plague of Dom. So what does Hashem Yisbuch decide in his infinite wisdom, Kaviyachol? Let's go in and do something. That's not Stam, 10 novel concepts that the Egyptians are not. You don't need that. In the end of the day, any one massive plague can overwhelm them. This is about also addressing their whole theology. Their entire intricate polytheistic system, all their ideology, all their theology, is going to crumble along with the people themselves. Remembering that of I'm also meaning out punishment against their gods. So let's walk it through. We have plague number one. What does that mean, Moshe Rabbeinu? Go to their god, and I want you to go and destroy them. The power of the god is, all our sustenance comes from the Mayim. You're going to go out and destroy their god, and turn all of the Mayim in Egypt into blood, which is not drinkable, which is not usable for anything. Meaning what? Take away the source of life, from the Mitzrayim, punish them on the one hand, punish the people that they can't go ahead, but it's not simply about punishing them. In the end of the day, they can buy water off the Yidden. That's how they got water in the end of the day. Hashem can just starve them until they have no choice but to let the Jews go. No, you're going to get water. Go. But the point is, I'm punishing you, Mitzarecha, that you can't drink water, you can't use it for irrigation, crops, etc. But on the other hand, what is really happening here? Egypt, I want you to go over to your God. We ask the question, why would Hashem give them two makas that they themselves could do? You're coming up with just 10. Any 7-year-old kid can come up with new imaginative makas that no one can come up with. What's going on there? So geshmak. And then Hashem Yisbaruch says, I'm going to put their backs against the wall and I'm going to put them in a situation when they have to strike their own God. And look how silly the belief is. Same way Avram Avinu, Avram Ivri makes Alei Tzadis out of the Avodah Zarah. Kol Etzinu Sassuruch Chutz Me'Avodah Zarah. And what does Avram Avinu do? He smashes all the idols, takes the hammer, puts it in his, and says, no, what do you mean? He couldn't do it. And he makes them aware. Look at the folly. Look at the shtuyot. Look at the darishkeit. How can you believe in Avodah Zarah? Egypt, this isn't about just showing off the might of God. We all know you can show off the omnipotence and the might of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but as long as they still maintain their belief system, they still have their gods, they can say, okay, your God got us this time around. Our God is going to beat you in round number 2. When all 10 rounds of the boxing match Kaviyachol are over, our God's going to come out on top. It's not about that. It's about putting an entire society in a situation. Go ahead, I dare you guys. Go over to your God and strike your God. Turn your God into blood. Look at the shtuyot of it. You're telling me this God controls you? You see that I'm putting you in a situation that you have to use your own powers of Kishon to turn your own God and destroy and invalidate and debase your very own number 2 God. I dare you to do so. They have no choice. They have no choice. They have to stand up to Moshe. Why do they have to stand up to Moshe? Let me ask you another question. Paro tried to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. When he went, Vayachas HaMitzri, Paro finds out about it, so we know the Medrash. Neck turns to marble, Gamaliel chases him out of the land. So we see that what? You're right. Enoch and Ami, he couldn't kill him. Okay, so maybe so. But he was able to chase him out of the land. So now Moshe comes back and he's 80 years old now. And all of a sudden he's got a VIP pass. Paro, here I am, I'm back again. Okay, so chase him out, Nochamo. Try and kill him again. Maybe he's 80, he aged a little bit. Maybe now we're going to go kill him. No attempt to kill him. He's got a VIP pass. Yeah, you can imagine coming into the president, the security system. You can't just stop him. Where's the security? Where's this KGB? Was that? Moshe just walks in whenever he wants before any of the Makkah said, what's going on here? Terence says, what's the whole Machloikas? The whole Machloikas is, whose gods are in control? Whose gods are on top? Whose gods are number 1? And Mamela, Moshe now is the arch nemesis of Paro. Paro says, I'm the Pharaoh. They're all called Pharaohs. They're all what? What's Paro? Paro, we know the Arizal, Osios HaOref. Shows him the nape of the neck, isn't interested in speaking. Koach HaDibur. But Paro's also, writes the Degamach Ne'Ephraim, writes the Morva Shemesh. Paro is Pera. Perah, he's got an evil tongue, but perhaps we can add, based on knowing ancient Egyptian history, Porah, they believed, the historians, right, that the divine rested in their soul, that they were the son, the S-O-N, of the son of the S-U-N. They believed that they were divine in nature, hence all the King Tut and all the King Akhenaten and all burying of Bechulei. The whole idea is bury them with their wealth, because that's how they're going to the afterlife, and they never really die in a sense. That's the continuation of Egyptian pharaohs, the number 1 dynasty in the history of the world at the time, and really the history of the world for good, the longest extended dynasty in controlling the entire world. We're on top. Also, Moshe comes in and says, you guys are not on top, we're on top. It's my God against your God, and it's me against you. Paro says, okay, we're going to battle it out. No, what are you going to chase him out of the land? That doesn't show anything. Whole point is, okay, let's go and do battle. Let's go into battle. All the symbolism. Let's turn sticks into snakes. Let's control them. Let's play with your gods. Korban Pesach. Let's take one of your gods and we're going to shecht it in front of your face. But how's it going to start? Let's go to the Nile and let's go in and turn it into blood. You're right. In and of itself, you could come up with more original ideas. But L'chaira, what's going on here is they are now putting force, they're put in a predicament that they have no alternative but to destroy their own God. And making laughing stock out of the Egyptian people, out of their entire fundamental theology, destroying their own God. Then we get to plague number 2. Plague number 2 is frogs. Frogs come out of the Nile River. Machlaikas, Sanhedrin, Samazai, the men of Shabbo, Lazarus, Nazari, Bekiva. One frog gets split, turns into 2, into 4, Machulei, or all the frogs gather. Either way, God's controlling the frogs. And what happens? They're coming out of the water. Okay, Mitzrayim, I dare you. Before you did Makas down, what'd you do? You struck your own God, and you debased and devalued and invalidated your very own God. Now, let's see, can your God protect you? Not only will your God not protect you, but the very next plague is going to come from your own God. Your own God is giving you good stuff, is protecting you. We're now putting you in a situation that you're going to create a makkah from your God. Dahainu, not only will you succeed in devaluing and debasing and disparaging your own God, but you're going to create a plague from your own God. Your own God, your own back's against the wall now, you're going to create plague number two coming from your God. Then we get to makkah skin. They've already destroyed the number two God. All the other gods are beneath the Nile River. Nothing can function. The sheep can't be sheep unless they have water to drink. And once you knock the Nile, that's it. You've gotten them at the core of all their basic theology. And now we get to Kenan. If you ever saw pictures from all the hieroglyphics, everything that they found in the caves, all the pictures of ancient Egyptian priests, they had no hair in their body. And they shaved the hair on their head, and they shaved every hair in the body. You know, why did they do that? Because they mamish had OCD. And they mamish, even though we know one comedian once quipped, anyone who has OCD will tell you it's not OCD, it's got to be alphabetical order, it's CDL. Right? It's not OCD. In the end of the day, these Egyptians were so makpid on their hygiene that you could never go into any of the altars. Remember, the whole society is all about worshiping the priests. That's why they can be mashiv, even Shevet Levi. Priests can't do work. Priests can't be part of the Shibud. And their priests, it was all built around their religious life. We're here to serve the sun, here to serve the Nile. The Pharaoh himself, deity number three, because he was the son of the sun, he goes and deity number three, Pharaoh, meets up with deities one and two, up the Malbim, Virus, Ayin, Aleph, every single morning. And now, when they want to speak to their gods, they have to offer sacrifices. Not only did they shave all the hair on their body in order to go into their temples to pray and sacrifice to their gods, all the writings clearly indicate they shaved off every hair of every animal sacrifice. Why? Because they were so OCD, there can't be any bug, there can't be any asharis for a bug. We might have a concept called beaker movement. They did a beaker that there can't be a single bug. The easiest way to ensure that there will never be a single bug on you or a single bug on any of the animal sacrifices is to do what? Is to shave every last hair on the body. So can you imagine? Let's go to Makkah Kingdom. That's what Kimmy, you got us with a bug. Once it's much more than just a bug. Hasakishav couldn't control a very apochus mikasira, but there's so much more than just getting them with a little bug. What's the idea? And why Kenan, we asked? Not only that, Hashem gets titus with the yitosh, so why not use yitushim? Why not use gnats? Why not use mosquitoes? Why not get lice? Because the lice inhabit animals, lice go wherever there's hair. Lice are all over dogs, lice are vermin, all wherever there's hair. Look at this nes patoch nes. And now you're giving them a plague of lice. So what do you do? They run to their temples. Let's offer sacrifices to our gods. But they can't. Why? Because it's a nes v'toch nes. Nobody has a hair in their body. And still the lice are all over them. No animals have a hair in their body. And still they're infested with lice. And they're infested with lice. They can't even enter their temples. They can't pray to their gods. They can't offer any sacrifices to their gods. What a shtuch. First you went ahead and you destroyed your own god. Go ahead. I dare you guys. Makas dam. Slap your god in the face. Boom, Makkah's down. You're right, there are more more creative ideas, but I'm having you simultaneously afflicted while you're also playing a role in destroying your God. And then we get to what's Kingdom? That's what we're giving. Now, what do we see? We see now there's a Jewish God because we can't even go to our gods. You might have a powerful Jewish God, but as long as we can go to ours, there's still a yachas, there's still a relationship. There's still what? We can be saved. We can have powers. But now what? What we see over here now is they can't serve. They can't go into it. It's a nes v'toch nes. And because they're all infested with lice and vermin, and they're animals as well, no sacrifices can be bought, and no Egyptian priest can do anything. Mamish without any hair on any of their bodies, and still they're afflicted with lice. That's plague number three.
Why not just stop at Kenan? Why'd you need the other seven?
Because as we saw from the Ramban, the Barbanel, our Stipler, the whole Arichas, we want to show that every chelik of the Bria is controlled. And the end of the day, we got them now. Hashem controls all the Brias down here. And now what about the animals? We know they worshipped a lot of animals. So now they're going to be attacked by what? All the animals now are going to come after them. All the wild animals. They had all different types of gods. All different systems. The snakes and the scorpions are going to come after them. All different types of animals, boils. And the end of the day, they're addressing every chelik of the Bria to show that God's in control. Makas Dever is really a precursor to even what happened by Pesach. Makas Dever, a plague of pestilence. There's no god here. There's nothing here. And Eishon is just dropping dead. Haganis having all their gods. The sheep just dropped dead. All these animals now afflicted until you get to the end of Eiro. And then you get to Borod. And what is happening now with Borod? Borod is the first Makkah when the Torah goes out of its way at the end of Eiro to specify that the Borod went every single chelik of the Bria. Every other one of the first six plagues afflicted either human beings or their crops and vegetation in an agrarian Egyptian society, or their animals, the livestock, or a combination thereof, but never all three simultaneously. Boward is called what? Komagefosa. Seven, we know it's all about Shlemus. Shlemus is, it's a done deal, and that perhaps explains why the Makkas are broken up. We get to the end of Eiro. We're at Makkas Borod. Now you're going to get Adam, Behema, Esav, Asada, from the heavens on high. You're going to create something new, fire and water. You're going to get Adam, Behema, and Esav, Asada. We're done. We're done with the Makkas. We're done with Parshas Vayera, that Hashem is Vayera. I will appear. I did appear, Vayera Lavas. I appeared in the past. I'm going to appear now, and God certainly did appear. And now I gave them plague number seven, which accomplished the writ afflicting simultaneously mankind, all the animals, and the crops. We got them all, so we're done. Take the Jews out. There's one thing remaining. What's the one thing remaining? We got all their gods down here. All the other plagues were afflicting their gods. We got their whole system of gods, but we didn't get number one. Now Hashem says what? Bo. Interesting. Bo is Gematria 3. Balatur, that means there's something in Bo that's highlighting the three Makkas. That's the essence of the Parsha. What's unique about these three? Oh, we know from the Kotzker Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak and Ivorki, and the Yovan Shmua, many of the Sfarim, it should be Lech, Lech HaParah. What's Bo? Bo is Lech as you go. Bo is come, let's go together. Hashem says this Parsha is Moshe, let's go together. This is going to be the Parsha that's going to bring about their downfall. Why? Because we've gotten all their other gods. We didn't get the number one God. The number one God is the Sun God. So what are we going to do now? Bo, God says, Moshe, I'm coming now with you. What happens? Let's give a plague of Arba. We ask, what's so severe about plague number eight? No, it's very geschmack. Because plague number eight is the Mamutza, is the bridge between seven and the last three. It's the only Makkah, by the way, that we ever mention the name of any other Makkah in its context. Not only do we mention Makkah's Borod in Arba, we even mention Choshech. And first we mention Choshech. Why? Because Arba is going to come to do what? Not just to remove and finish off what Borod didn't do. Arba is going to be what? Arba is going to set the stage for Makkah's Choshech. Simultaneously, it'll finish off the Chit and the Kesemes, which didn't get hit. Lo Nukul Kiafi Lo Seina. So Arba is going to be the next line. It's going to get rid of every last vestige of all the crops of Mitzrayim. That's Mamas Hazer, right? So first, it's getting rid of their whole food supply. But more importantly, and what's mentioned first is what? Vatech Shacharetz Vayechasas Ein Kolaretz. What's Ein Kolaretz? Right? It's a tongue of Onklos. Ein Shimsha. We're going to block out the sun. You look in the back of a $1 bill, and what do you have? You have a pyramid. What's on top of the pyramid on the left-hand side? An eye. An eye. That's Ein Shimsha. Their eye. That's the sun. They believe controlled all of ancient Egyptian soil. That's Ein Kolaretz. That's Ein Shimsha. What are the locusts going to do? Even after the plague, they got everything in sight. And yet what? Vayamar. It's the only plague that Paro runs to Moshe. It's the only one that they call Ki of the Mitzrayim. All of Egypt is lost. It's the only one that they call the Yosemite. What's so severe about locusts? And they're even eating them. It wasn't about the plague. They got all the crops ready and still power is running. Why? Because you're blocking out my God. Where are the rays of my sun? I can't see my number one God who controls everything. Without the sun, we have garnished. But we didn't afflict the sun directly. That's Choshech. That's number nine. This is setting the stage for Choshech while destroying everything that Borah did. Arba. This is recognizing what? That there's a God coming with Moshe. Hashem says, their sun, I control the sun. Meshachokhmi even says, you know what we call it, the Shemesh? What was it called in the beginning of Bereshis? Moragadol. That's the only thing Hashem changed the name. It's called Moragadol, and then afterwards it's never again called Moragadol. Why? Why is it Meshachokhmi? Parshas Lech Lecha. Because Moragadol, this is the number one. If there's an Elohim, what's that? It's the sun, the moon. The number one celestial body is the sun. All society, photosynthesis, Mother Nature is all the sun. They worship the sun. That's unbelievable, right? What's the new name for the rest of history? Shemesh. Why is it called the Shemesh? It's only here to be Meshamesh. A That's only here to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. It's never more HaGadol, that awesome appellation. Henceforth, it's only Hashemesh, because it's only here to be Meshavesh. Now God sends locusts, they block out the rays. But he didn't destroy the sun directly. We can't see, we can't relate, we can't pray. But we know he's there. All of a sudden, now Arba goes away. The bridge is done, we have number 8. Arba backwards is Hashem Bara. Now we see Hashem Bara, not just Sitzvah Lakimi. Arba is Gematria 208, Shem Avaya times 8, 26 times 8, 208, Gematria Arba. This is the 8th Giloy of Shem Avaya in the world. Balaturim, God rests on Shabbos. The word Vayanach only appears twice in Chumash. Vayanach v'chol gvul matron, Vayanach v'yam ha-shvi. God rests on Shabbos, we rest on Shabbos. Grasshoppers, by the way, interesting. It's the only creature in the world, that insect, that's kosher. Kosher, why? Beginning of Sefer Yoah, what are they called? Cheli, Chayel, Esa Chayel, Esa, they're my soldiers. Why are they missing? You ever pick up a kosher grasshopper, they have an Osches on their underside in their belly. Osches, they were the 8th plague. Osches, they're Chayel. They're the soldiers of God. Why are they the soldiers of God? Because they are here to destroy the number one God of Mitzrayim. Interesting. There's only one creature in all Tanakh, Mishlei, Alam Chazayin, that doesn't have a king, Melech Ema Arba. Why? Because they recognize there only is one king, Melech Ema Arba. There only is the mouth, Machi Emlech. We have plague number 8. They block out the number one God. Now we're up to 9. What's Choshech? What's Choshech is the direct attack. We're destroying the sun. Afterwards, can you imagine you're sitting frozen for 6 days? No one's dying. No one's getting killed. But your whole society is crumbling. There's garnish. Once you get the number one God, there's no hope for rebuilding. There's no potential to ever go ahead and ever again rebuild society. At 6 days, you're sitting there frozen and what? And the Jewish God is attacking, is destroying your God. That's it. If you destroy the Nile, we still got the sun. You destroy the sun, that's it. That's Choshech. That's why Choshech is so severe. And that's why there's only one thing left. Once you got the Father in heaven, once you got their Father, the Son, now all you have to do is now cut the dynasty, is now destroy any potential for continuity, for perpetuity, because they believe the pharaohs, as long as they're alive, as long as they're children, we continue the dynasty. So if you have a no father, but the son can continue, Marcus Bechairus is about, we're going to destroy all continuation. We're going to destroy the Bechor, and Bechor Paro, we're going to destroy that next pharaoh in line. No more succession, no more dynasty. Egyptian pharaoh society is now over. We got the son, now we're going to get the son of the son, the S-O-N of the S-U-N, and that's going to be Marcus Bechairus. From the beginning to the end.
Paro didn't die.
He was Paro didn't die, but we destroyed God saving him. That's the Hashlam of the Gula. It's going to be Kriyas Yamsuf. But in the meantime, what are we destroying? We're destroying the continuity of the Egyptian dynasty. And we're cutting, severing the ties, destroying the Bechor. There's no continuity. We got the Father, now we're getting the Son. And that's a Bechor HaMitzrayim HaShashwotim. God's number 1, 2, and 3, and all the other smaller gods in between. From the beginning until the end, we had all Egyptian society. Who was on top? It's Moshe who was on top. He earns the respect of the Mitzrayim. He has Erevah, people are converting. Now they realize there's only one God, that's the Jewish God. There's only one person in control, that's the Galvis of Moshe Beinu. Those are the Yeser Makas, Yeser Kaya.